You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. Thank you guys for joining us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast, where Seth and I get to show you how to maximize your life through the power of real estate investing. We've got a good one today. There's a lot going on in the commercial real estate realm, Seth.
Yes, there is. So we decided to bring in an expert. So we got Ashley Wilson here with us today. Ashley, how are you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, it's good to have you.
Ashley's our neighbor just east in the great state of Pennsylvania, which is like my preferred place if I don't want to go too far to camp. There is like beautiful hills. Now, and we're Northwest Ohio, so everything is flat. So Pennsylvania looks like, I don't know, like the Himalayan mountains compared to where we are. So it's a beautiful country there. How are you doing this morning?
Excellent. It's great weather finally. Really excited about spring and summer right around the corner.
Well, there's a lot to be excited about, you know, depending on your perspective in the market right now. By the time this releases, you know, we've had a couple of months now where things have unfolded. The Fed would have gone through, and we don't know yet, but what their decision is going to be in May in terms of interest rate hikes and stuff. But one thing, Ashley, about you, just got in touch with you really in the last couple of weeks, is you have the entrepreneurial bug. So tell us, what were some of those first few business startups that you did in real estate, and give us some context to who you are, and catch us up to today.
So I started investing in real estate in 2009. I came across real estate because I was working in corporate America and I was looking for an alternative way to diversify my retirement strategy. I think like most people. And the first foray into real estate came through house hacking and short-term rental. Then I did long-term rentals. I started a high-end flipping business with my father, who's a general contractor and has owned his own company for over 45 years. That business was very successful. We started it in 2014 and we renovated full gut renovations, by the way, historic homes anywhere from 1890 to 1960 were our bread and butter. But what we did is we kept the original history intact in the home, which is very different than most flippers, because most flippers will pull off the baseboards and go to Home Depot and pick whatever is the cheapest option.
The MDF board.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Savage. We did not do that. We refurbished as much as we possibly could to just keep everything intact, but bring it up with modern mechanicals and amenities. So we always set market premium on all the properties that we did. And we were very sought after. We're still sought after. People want us to renovate their home. That was never our business model. We tried it. We really didn't like it. It's much easier working for yourself and designing for yourself.
It's really hard to work. Yeah. It's really hard to start working with the client.
The high-end luxury space it's a different mind. It's a different thing.
Totally different. And, I like to tell the story that what happened was in single family, I got a tax bill the one year and it was six figures. And that's one house that I had renovated. So looking to myself,
you got a tax bill that was for six figures off of one flip that you did?
Off of one flip, but off of an entire year of doing it.
Single family. Wow.
Essentially, the way I looked at it is I flipped X house for free. And that entire project was for free. And I worked for the government
That doesn't feel
out of the kindness of my heart. So
I have a sneaky suspicion it wasn't out of the kindness of your heart.
No, it wasn't. It infuriated me. So I started to look and explore other real estate investing opportunities that had more tax advantages. So basically what I tend to look at in my mindset is that every challenge actually has an opportunity. And if you work hard enough, you can figure out what that opportunity is. So most people look at taxes and they look at it as a downfall and they're very frustrated with taxes. But instead of being frustrated at it, there's always a loophole. You always can figure out what the advantages of playing the tax system are as well. So what I did was I aligned myself with really good tax experts. I still utilize them today. In fact, we have a meeting once a year where the subject of the meeting, the only topic of the meeting is how do I not pay taxes this year? And it's all based on how do I use the tax codes to defer my tax liability and exposure for that year. And it's all about what I buy, how I buy. And that's what led me to multifamily real estate.
And it's all legal.
Yeah, and it is all legal.
No one call the IRS on Ashley.
No, I mean, and the thing is I think that most people are at a disadvantage because they're using a CPA who, I know tax code, but they also know, other specialties where you need someone whose sole specialty is real estate. And that's the difference. Yeah. And
can you talk about the difference between a tax strategist and a CPA? Because there is a difference. You know, one is looking back reactively. Hey, how'd you do this year? Let's get all the paperwork around and see where the chips fall. No one likes that strategy. But then, like you said, to have someone sit down with you once a year to say, okay, Ashley, what's the game plan for the year ahead so that you owe, zero taxes? That is a way different mindset than what a lot of people have.
A CPA is someone who knows the tax code. A tax strategist is knowing what is also coming down Washington. So in terms of how do you position yourself based off of tax legislation that may or may not go through is hugely beneficial. You get ahead of the curve, case in point, opportunity zones. So I was invested in a property that was in an opportunity zone. And at the time that, this was all going on, I was just starting to align myself with a tax strategist. And if I had been with them, a couple years prior, that investment would have probably been magnified in terms of the returns because we would have structured it differently. Mm-hmm. So that's really the difference. And you need both. You really do. And if you can find someone who almost doubles as both, that's great. But aligning yourself with a firm that specializes in real estate or has a department that specializes in real estate and you just work with that group, you can find that you can put yourself to such a huge advantage. And that's what I was able to do. So I went from paying six figures in federal taxes to then the following several years being able to defer all of my federal taxes for the previous year. And what's great about deferral is it's not a use it or lose it situation. So it carries forward, whatever gets unused carries forward. Now, I am not a CPA, so you need to check all of this information that I'm telling you with your CPA so I don't get in trouble. But the way I understand it is the following, and my experience has been the following. So that is why I transitioned to commercial. And then there are other real estate asset classes that have the same benefits, but to me, multifamily, you have a hedge against inflation, right? It's a recession resistant asset class historically. So when I looked at where we were in the market cycle, do I want to go into, something that does not have a strong track record during previous recessions, or do I want to go into something that actually typically either is stable or increases in value during recessions and performs very well during recessions? So there are tons of reasons I went into multifamily, but that was kind of the preliminary reason that launched me into multifamily.
So 2009, you started, Dow was a contractor, you were making it happen, finding success in the residential side of things, wasn't sustainable. So you pivoted into commercial real estate, multifamily specifically. You founded Bar Down Investments. Is that the entity that you were acquiring multifamily kind of at the inception of when you started focusing there?
Yes. So I started Bar Down in 2018. So Bar Down, the the reason behind the name is my husband was a professional ice hockey player, and bar down is the best shot you can take in hockey. And it involves a lot of precision, a lot of practice. And what we wanted to provide and showcase to our investors and everyone we work with is that we do things with intention. We practice a lot, so we take perfect shots. Wow. So that's the conception behind the name, but that is what we do business under for our multifamily purchasing arm.
And before we started recording, you were telling us a little bit of kind of what led up to Apartment Addicts, which is, we're probably going to talk about that a little bit more here because that's where you pour your energy. So take us through, what were some of those investments early on through Bar Down with your husband? And then how did you start Apartment Addicts?
So when I first started investing in commercial, my husband did a little bit, but not that much. I actually partnered with another group. And the way I was able to leverage existing skills, I get asked every day, all day, how can I work with you? But no one leads with, this is the value I add. Is this a deficit for your current operations? And that is what I did to get my foot in the door for multifamily. So what I did is once I decided I wanted to get into multifamily, now keep in mind, I hadn't even done a duplex before. Wow. So I went around and I started telling people I want to do large commercial real estate. And it just so happens one of the first or second people that I told this to was under contract for 124 unit in Houston, Texas. And one of the buildings had just burnt to the ground while they were under contract. And none of the partners had any knowledge or experience with renovation or construction. Whoa. And they looked at my skill set. So what I said is, I didn't just say, I want to be involved in large multifamily. I said, I want to be involved in large multifamily. And the value that I think I can provide is I am very well versed in construction, both residential and commercial. I've done new construction and rebuilds and renovations, full gut renovations, six-figure renovations, and I do them quickly and efficiently. And I can manage projects for people on the construction side. So that's how I was able to get my foot in the door, because they had a void in their partnership team. I came on, and when I started working with them, I realized right away that no one was doing asset management. I had never asset managed a commercial property before, even a duplex, as I mentioned before. I had done single family rentals. I had done Airbnbs and house flipping. And I had been successful, to be honest with you, I've been successful at all of them. And so I took all the skills that I learned there. And I came from corporate America, where I always worked in a remote capacity. And I worked in vaccine development, running clinical trials prior to regulatory approvals. So I knew how to put systems and process in place. And I did I took the exact same approach. And I just tried to consume as much information as possible, work with different people, just listen. I just listened constantly and asked questions. That's all I did for about a year and a half to 2 years. Wow. Out of my entire educational experience with, you know, high school, college, undergrad, graduate school, those 2 years I had learned more and worked harder and was tested more than any other time in my educational history.
When you were a part of that Houston, Texas investment?
Yes, because I was learning on the job. I was literally trying to, you know, build the train tracks as a train is going down 1,000 miles an hour.
Right.
Yeah. And I didn't even know what I didn't know. That was probably the hardest part. Everything else I'd ever done, I knew what I didn't know. But in multifamily, I had no idea. I literally had no idea. I didn't know all the pieces that were together. Yeah.
So I think what's interesting hearing you talk about that is, you know, you had experience overseeing renovations, you know, construction, rehab, reposition, all that stuff, but six-figure budgets, the 140 unit, that was probably a multi-million dollar project, right? So
yeah,
what's beautiful about that though, is you'd had past experience, and you found success there, gave you confidence, but then you also had to grow into like some bigger shoes for that one. So how did you, I mean, tackling something like that, did you find that you had all the tools that you needed from your prior experience, or did you have to go and kind of pull in some new resources?
The construction I was fine with. I actually rebuilt the building in under 6 months.
With your bare hands?
not with my bare hands. I mean, I managed the project. I didn't physically build it. Right. I don't want to be misleading, but I managed the project. It was rebuilt in under 6 months. We started it in July, end of July. We had our CO in December.
Was it a total loss?
Yeah. I mean, it was down. It literally literally down to the foundation. So, and I was under budget. So, allocated by the insurance company. I think it was $612,000 and we came in at $581,000. So, you know, I was definitely very proud of that. I was proud of the renovations that we were doing on the property. I had all of those under budget. We had the renovation scheduled for 2 years. I had it done in 8 months. You know, I really did not have a problem on the construction side. On the asset management side, though, that's a different story. There were so many things I didn't know. You know, I really struggled to put the pieces together. But I think the benefit now, you know, if you know, you take those dark days and I mean, I literally was on the phone with our property management company at least 3 days a week until 2 a.m. every single night.
Oh
like it was just,
well, kudos for them to be on the phone with you till 2 a.m.
Well, now she's my best friend. So like we've grown like together. And what's amazing is that, you know, that situation when you're in the thick of it, you're like, oh my God, this is so terrible. You know, I don't know if this is sustainable. This is really, really hard. But what I realized is it's not sustainable, right? It's not sustainable. You cannot scale with this model. But the benefit of that is there are very few people. I mean, I can't even count on one hand how many people have that same experience that I have. So in terms of, you alluded to earlier, my coaching program that I started with Jay, Apartment Addicts.
And Jay Scott, just for anybody else who's listening, who was kind of like the Bigger Pockets original guy. So yeah, how did you guys get paired together and what's that look like?
Yeah. So I'll just finish this one thought here, which is that entire situation has led me to build out what I believe is the most robust coaching program. Because all of the other coaching programs that I looked into when I was struggling only showed you how to find apartments and how to raise capital for them, but no one told you how to operate them. No one knew how to operate them and no one knew how to put all these pieces together because I was forced into this situation where I had to literally do absolutely everything from soup to nuts because of that. And I know it's not sustainable. I know how to do at least every part of that, every aspect of it. I know how to underwrite. I know how to raise capital. I know how to operate. I know how to do construction management. I know how to refi. I know how to do all of these things that most people don't know how to do. And I know how all the pieces fit together. So that to me is a huge benefit because we could build our entire coaching program off of that. And our students have been wildly successful because they've been able to also see how all these pieces are put together and learn from my own mistakes. So, with Jay, we were able to partner. I actually met him at a conference years ago and I had, an idea, tend to be kind of a visionary. And I had an idea and I went up and I asked if I could talk to him about this idea. And I started talking to him about it and he loved the idea. And it just so happened that his business partner was there. So he wanted to introduce me to his business partner. So then I grabbed my husband. So the four of us then spent the next 2 hours at this conference in a side room talking. We then worked together for 3 months and we all came to the conclusion that it wasn't a viable option. From more on the government side of things that created too much red tape for us to scale it to the level we wanted to scale it at. But now we kind of had like some basis as to how we worked. And you know, we had mutual respect for each other and we had this kind of sampling of working together. And then I eventually ran into him at a project where I was brought in to consult, and he saw how I operate and he saw how I restructured this portfolio that wasn't doing well. And he called me, I honestly, probably when the plane landed, when I got home, and just like said, what can I do for you to teach me? I'll do absolutely anything that your business needs if you will teach me everything you know. And then he asked if he could partner with me. And then I asked later if he could come on as not just a partner on one property, but as a partner in the project.
Yeah.
And the irony is our board now consists of myself, my husband, Jay, and his partner that I met years before.
Oh, wow.
So the four of us, still to this day, not only do we have bar down investments, but our personal investments, we invest together. So when, you know, someone brings us another multifamily as passive investors, or if it's a tech company, we're involved in so many things together. Mm. We're involved in a rum company together, as GPs really cool. actually on, the rum company. So, we just now are so tight knit, and it all started, you know, you got to walk before you run kind of philosophy.
Yeah. That's so much there that somebody could unpack in terms of how to put yourself out there, how to network, you know, why to network. And when it doesn't turn out into something immediately, you're still putting seeds in the ground that could take later and for a different season, a different time. And it still has value to do that, you know? So one of the focuses of this episode, why we wanted to bring you on, a lot of changes going on in the market right now. You know, there's that kind of proverbial, like when the tide goes out, you see who's swimming without their britches on. So, one of the things I want to ask you is, how do you sharpen your operations in a tightening market? How do you, you know, you don't have as many levers to pull. You can't rely on rent growth to take you there and to kind of like pick up your mishaps and maybe miss timelines on a renovation or a reposition. You can't just rely on the appreciation to help you refinance. You know, you have to drive and actually execute a business plan for the properties that, you know, people are managing and are owning. So give us, maybe a good place to start would be the consultation that you did where you met Jay. What, when you came in to that group and looked at their portfolio that maybe was underperforming or whatever, what were the things that you looked at, the indicators, to even craft a new plan and steer the ship in a different way?
Everything. So all the way down to their initial underwriting assumptions, pro forma. I looked at the market, I looked at their debt structure, I looked at their comp analysis. And then, so I did all that groundwork before I even got to the property. And then I looked at their performance metrics and what they were hitting, what they weren't hitting, and where I thought they should be hitting. So I came into, before I arrived on location, I already had a good sense, because there's a lot you can do with technology today. I mean, even with Google Maps, you can go down Street View and get a sense of, you know, the area. Plus, I just happened to know that market, so I knew the tenant base already. Mm-hmm. That was just crazy, like that I knew that market. Just
made you look like a baller, probably.
Like, oh, probably, yeah, probably, because I definitely, you know, if it had been another market in that same state, I wouldn't have known it as well, right?
Yeah.
But I had it just, you know, a little bit of luck on my side, I guess you could say. So then, what ended up happening is once I got to the site, I kind of like had a plan of like, okay, I need these people to check, because we're only there for a certain amount of days. And basically I'm like doing DD all over again, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I need, you know, someone to go to the permits office to confirm how many new builds are coming online. I need someone to shop the comps. I need someone to, and I drove them, but I didn't shop them. I didn't have time to shop them because I also had to go on site. Then I interviewed the PM company, saw what they were doing. I toured units. I got a sense of like what was going on. And then we went to Starbucks and I sat down and I was like, these are the things we need to do. These are the things we need to change. And starting with redoing all of your underwriting and your underwriting assumptions and your business plan. I think a lot of people do a couple, I'll say three major things wrong that get them into hot water. Number one, actually say four. Number one is they don't know how to do comp analysis. So
you're talking about like comps for the rents. Sale or for the rent? Okay.
For the rents. Yep. Yeah. Mm. I'm just talking about rents here. So rents are a huge lever in terms of what you can pay for a property, what you can get on your returns. $10 can change your sale price by $1 million, right? And also your rent jumps by year. So if you don't have those properly allocated, you're destined to fail from the beginning. So, and I think people don't, they don't know how to analyze rent comps. Like, I think the problem is they don't put themselves in the shoes of a tenant who was touring, trying to consider, would I rent this place versus this place? Right. Yeah. I would, in my experience, a in-unit washer dryer typically equates to a $50 premium almost exclusively across. I haven't come across a market that that has not been the case, but you know, people will say, oh, well, we have a laundry facility and we have a better pool. So, you know, we're going to get the same rents, and that's just not going to happen. Right. So yeah, unless you're putting a washer dryer in there. So something like that, that's number one. Number two is they structure with the wrong type of debt. So the debt really is not well thought out. All that people think about is how do I get the cheapest debt? So my cheapest cost of capital equates to a higher purchase price, because it's, at the end of the day, your purchase price is directly tied to how much your capital costs. If someone's capital costs less, they can pay more for a property, both on debt and equity side. They don't think about it in terms of where are we in terms of the market cycle? What debt options are coming down the road? Like, everyone knew that we were about to hit a recession, and typically we see interest rates kind of go up and then go down, right? And settle out. And, you know, we're having these interest rate hikes, and people have variable, debt, variable interest rates, right? And, they didn't buy appropriate caps on that debt. Third is they don't have enough reserves. People are very, just frugal on their reserves. They're like terrible with reserves. They don't want to, have too much in reserves. So in terms of,
can I comment on just for a second?
Yeah.
I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you see another factor at play here, please interject. You know, if it's my property and I own the property and it's maybe just a tight joint venture, or it's just myself and one other partner or something like that, I'm okay with leaving money in the operational account and not taking it, because I know I've got income streams coming from somewhere else, you know, so I'll probably be a little more liberal with those reserves. But the temptation, and I'm not saying this is right, the temptation is when you have other investors that you have made commitments to on returns, or you're trying to raise and attract them and compete with other investment vehicles that they could put their money into. You want to lever as much as possible to make those returns as strong as possible. That's the temptation. And that's where people are getting in trouble, I think, right now. So, and ironically, it should be the opposite, right? Like, if I'm investing with other people's money, I should even be more conservative to, like, have a reserve set aside.
So, I mean, you're saying that they're trying to raise, they're not raising enough reserves just so that their way they're raising less money to have a higher return. Is that what you're kind of getting at?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, to make it look good on paper to get people attracted, you know? So, I mean,
I think that's a breakdown in failing to educate your investors correctly. My investors, like Jay and I's investors, our intention is not to get you money in the short term. Our sole objective is to maximize your return over a longer hold period. So if you're investing with us because you need that 6 to 8% cash flow every year, and that's going to make or break you, you should not invest with us, because we're trying to do is we're trying to take your dollar. Why? It doesn't even logically make sense. Why would you invest a dollar and then want that dollar back right away if it then in the long term, wouldn't it magnify your return? You know, have a little patience and realize that those investment dollars are working to make you more money in the long term. So I think people invest for different reasons. So in terms of our syndications and what we offer on our syndications, we offer what we're doing and what we specialize in is heavy value adds and heavy repositions. If you're going to invest in a core plus asset, a stabilized asset, there are completely different return expectations. Mm-hmm. And for that, I would say, yes, you know, you need to kind of live up to what you've painted as a picture. I think most people, most syndicators out there are trying to play both sides, and you really can't, or you really shouldn't. What I should say, not saying you can't, you can, but you sacrifice one versus the other. To me, we've been in positions before where we've had capital to return on multiple occasions, cash flow to return. And I literally meet with the investors and I say, we have distributions that we could distribute right now, but I'm holding them. And I'll tell you why I'm holding them. I have never had an investor call me afterwards and say, I think you're doing the wrong thing, or I want my distribution. I've not had a single person. And we've had this happen on multiple occasions. We had a property where it was under contract, and that property hadn't, this was a property that I partnered with. It wasn't one that we initiated at Bar Down. So not to throw anyone under the bus, but the underwriting was very tight to be able to execute. It was almost impossible to execute the way it was underwritten. And I didn't know that at the time. I got brought in very last minute, and the data that was sent to me supported the business plan. But in reality, that data was all wrong. So I didn't know that until I got into the thick of it. And we didn't do distributions for 2 years. 2 years. Wow. We were finally able to do distributions, but the market was turning and it was very opportunistic to put the property on the market. Mm-hmm. So I met with the investors in January of 2021. And I said to them, here's the thing. We have money to give very healthy distributions, but I'm telling you why we are not going to do distributions. We aren't going to do distributions because we're going to put this property on the market, and this property can give a very healthy return to you if you just trust me by not doing this. Because alternatively, if we do distributions and something comes up during due diligence, we potentially might have to do a capital call to get that money back to do a renovation on the property. Not that I thought that there would be, but you never know. You never know what a buyer is going to do. Everyone agreed and said, hold the distribution. No one questioned it. No one questioned it. That property returned a 31 IRR and a 34 AAR in a 2.5 year investment.
I bet they were happy.
They were ecstatic. And all of those investors reinvested because it's all about communication. I constantly told them everything we were doing, and I showed them, I know you aren't getting distributions, but here's the data. They had access to all 17 financial reports that we get as operators every single month. And I said, here's the trending data. You can see the property is doing better. You just have to trust me on this and let me continue to hold the capital. Because I'm telling you, if I can hold the capital and I can use it when it's needed, you're going to make a very good return. So
you had said four keys. So, you know, number one was not looking properly at the rent comps when you're doing the underwriting, not having the proper debt structure, and then not having adequate capital reserves. So what was the fourth thing there that people go
wrong? The fourth and probably the most sexy thing that everyone's been talking about, and I've been talking about it since 2018, is everyone relies too much on cap rate compression. And how can you rely on cap rate compression when we were at, you know, I was in the Houston market at this time, right before everything, you know, flipped. But like some of these properties, we were talking like C-class properties are trading like sub four. You know, like that's three and a half cap, which
wild.
Is ridiculous. I mean, first of all, the argument is like, well, you should be buying A class because there's not that much of a spread. But if there's any time for a cap rate compression, like if you want to argue to invest for cap rate compression, and people will probably kill me for saying this, but if you want to invest for cap rate compression, if you're looking for a 3 to 5, even 10 year hold, now would be the time to actually invest for cap rate compression. Because what you're saying is, over the next market cycle, at some point during the next 10 years, which typically market cycles are 8 to 10 years, you will see cap rates come down again, because now they're, you know, 200, 300 basis points higher than they were even a year ago. So In terms of when someone should actually be doing it, I would argue people should actually be doing it now versus 2 and 3 years ago when we were at the height of the market. The problem is people just don't understand market cycles and how you utilize market cycles to invest.
Mm. Yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, we're running out of time here, so we're going to skip to our little nugget. We got the air horn out for that. So what is one practical takeaway or piece of advice that you can impart to our listeners today for their real estate investing business?
You are who you surround yourself with the most. So whether, you know, you're the average of the 5 people that you hang around with the most, but being around like-minded people, whether it be in life or in business, will inevitably propel your career and your why. So make sure you choose your time wisely.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That's good. Tell us about Apartment Addicts. You kind of alluded to that. And maybe for some of our active investors who are looking, like, what's a good resource to grow kind of as an investor?
Apartment Addicts is our coaching platform and mastermind platform. It has different levels depending on your own personal experience. So what we're doing within the communities is we are matching like-minded people, just exactly what I was saying before, with each other to help everyone grow to the next level. Mm-hmm. So we have everything from entry level, you've never done a deal before, you're new to real estate investing, or maybe you aren't new to real estate investing and you know you want to get into multifamily, to people who are already in multifamily and are starting to build a business out of it. Maybe they've just left their W-2, to people who've already left full-time, are building now an empire. And that's the mastermind. The furthest down that continuum is the mastermind group, which is an annual membership with an in-person retreat, but it's once a month masterminding on more, it's not necessarily multifamily. It could be business oriented topics to help your business grow to the next level.
Yeah. High performing people with established businesses looking to scale.
Yep. Cool. And then where would they, I mean, is it apartmentaddicts.com, or where do they find that information about that?
Apartmentaddicts.com. And you can find information on all of those programs there. In September, we haven't announced this yet, but look out. In September, we're doing an apartment tour. It's either 2 days or 3 days in Houston, Texas, and we're going around to the apartments. So you get on-site training. If you're an Apartment Addicts member, you get that, trip for free. The event for free. But not only is it on-site, but we also have training, at our hotel, and we're doing some great events alongside of that as well. So it's going to be a lot of fun. But that'll give everyone firsthand training. We've done this before with our students. We've never opened it up to the general public. So this will be the first time that it's available for both our students and the general public.
That Very is cool. awesome. Well, and Ashley, we'll put all your social media information in the show notes as well, so people can find you. Thanks for coming on today and helping us make sense of some stuff in the operational world of real estate.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Awesome. As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.